Raised Rowdy.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast, and my name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nick Tressler.
And we have our most esteemed guest, Corey Kent.
And I'm Corey Kent.
Thanks for being here, brother.
Thank you, man. This is, I don't know, I feel like you guys are some of my oldest friends in the media space, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like we kind of grew up together in that way, so it's good to be back. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. It's super cool, as we talked about like a little bit before you came, just watching it grow.
Yeah.
From the days of when you were cutting songs like Gold, and I could see you open Pittsburgh. I was saying, like, I think you were one of the first hats I ever gave away.
Oh, dude, I remember that hat. It had the yellow microphone.
Yeah.
I remember it like vividly, because I remember you saying that you lived in Nashville when we met. You're like, I moved to Nashville. I was like, what are you doing in Pittsburgh? You're like, I'm from here, and I started this brand. And yeah, we were, what was that, 2018?
Mm-hmm.
Opening up for Steve Moakler.
Yep. Crazy.
And just fighting tooth and nail for anybody to pay attention as the acoustic opener. Yeah, that was some times. But yeah, it's been, well, likewise, dude. It's been cool to see. I mean, every time I come hang out with you guys, you're in a new
space.
An improved space, you know? So it's,
yeah,
it's awesome.
Moving on up.
Come on.
This one's definitely cooler than the green screen and the extra bedroom at the house.
Yeah, that didn't work so good.
Yeah. We tried, though.
It's kind of a vibe, though. You could put an eagle behind people. That was
very fun.
That was cool.
Hell yeah.
But man, thanks for, like we said, for popping by. And it's a busy time for you, as we just talked about.
I got all dressed up today.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, thank you. We're celebrating another number one today. So
great.
We're stoked about that. But yeah, I was going to wear sweatpants, and then I realized that I don't get to go home until really late tonight. So I was
got plenty
of apologies. Let's just dress up.
So. Yeah. Well, honestly, it's cool too, because like your branding and everything has like really developed.
It's evolving.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember when we got to sit down and hang out kind of, God, I guess it was after our last podcast, but maybe even since then, I don't know if you still have it, but you had like that house up here that you guys would stay in when you were here. And, it was, like you talking about branding and kind of like where you were going with the music sonically and where you were going. Like, so watching that whole thing develop's been super cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's, you know, I feel like you get the music right and then you figure the rest out, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the cool part, is for me, at least like from how I view it, the music's always been right.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out, you know, how does the rest of the brand really complement the music?
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, when stuff really started rolling for me, I was still working at a pavement company. Mm-hmm. And you don't really dress like this when you work at a pavement company. You know what I mean? But it's like, you kind of like, the more you go, the more almost like permission you have to explore everything, and
yeah,
then you find what you really love, and then you kind of go like, yeah. But it's just been an evolution. And I had a buddy that made me a hat, and I was like, man, I love wearing these hats. And so just kind of one day happened and just stuck, and it's fun, man. I love seeing my friends evolve as artists too, like,
yeah,
when you look back to you know, some of the, sorry, my youngest, our brand new babies here hanging out. My wife's
so
here.
You know what I was just thinking about? I was like, I hope we get a couple coos on the on the recording, because wouldn't it be wild in 20 years to go back on YouTube and just to listen to that?
Yeah, yep. For sure. For
and
sure.
Just be like, this is such a time capsule, like recording these podcasts.
I know.
It is.
It really is.
Me and Dana and I were just talking about how it's almost like disturbing to watch actors age.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, oh, we were in the hospital the other day, kind of had a scare with our little one, and they had Friends on in the hospital. And I'm like, it's kind of like, these people are immortalized in my mind as this age, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And to see them, it's like, man, that's great. I feel like we're going to do that with, you know, you guys having a podcast or me having my face on an album cover. Like, it's just going to be kind of a trip to like wake up one day and be like, man, I don't look like I used to look anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't as happy as I was.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I got a lot more grays than when I started the podcast, you know? That's kind of how it works.
Bro, don't cover those up. You earn those.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You earn those.
Plenty of years of degeneracy and good times.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that's great, bro.
Yeah, it's funny. Nick and I were kind of going down memory lane about all the kind of times we've hung out and, you know, all of our Corey stories, and it's cool to see everything grow, man. Like you said, you're having a number one party, yeah, which is crazy.
It is, man. And we've had a really interesting road with country radio specifically, you know, just like we came out of the gates hot and had a like debut number one on a independent release, which is kind of, I mean, that doesn't happen that often.
No.
And then, you know, to follow it up, I'm like, man, I want to make a statement, and we do, and it just doesn't do anything. And it didn't ever break the top 40, but it's a platinum song. So fast forward, and we're like, all right, well, here's the next one. And it didn't look like it was going to work for a long time. For almost like a year, it didn't break top 50. Mm-hmm. And but it was, we were seeing it work live, and that was the most confusing part. It's like, man, we know it's a hit song based on the fan reaction. The phones go up, people are singing along, like, what, why is this not translating? And that was kind of the second song in a row, and then it finally kind of worked its way up, and once it did, it became one of the most, I think it was like top five most played songs in country radio last year, which is insane. But it just took a long time for it to catch on, and when it finally did, it worked. So now we got a new one at country radio, and it, same thing's happening with the fans. Like, we're seeing, it's a song that I put out with Coe Wetzel,
yeah,
and
Rocky Mountain Lou,
yeah, it, yeah. Dude, it's reacting with the fans, which is how I make my living, right? Like,
right.
Country radio is like cherry on top, but if people aren't buying tickets, it doesn't matter how well it does at country radio.
Yep.
So we're seeing the tickets move, we're seeing people react to the song, and then to finally see it's clicking at radio at the same time it's clicking with the fans, which is really cool. It's kind of almost a first for me, you know. It's I don't even know where it's at, but it's way higher than my previous songs were at this moment.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
I love that too, and it's cool to be able to do that with a guy that you've known for a long time, like Co as well.
Yeah,
oh. You know, and lean a little bit more into that, like,
it was a dream,
side,
man,
of things.
Yeah, I've you know, obviously living in Oklahoma and Texas, like, Co's just a legend, and yeah, it was really fun. Like, we went to Cabo together, and we were smoking cigars and hanging out by the
Sounds
beach,
amazing.
And oh, it was amazing, man. It was so good, and that was really where we kind of started hanging out a decent bit. And then fast forward, we end up you know, our music kind of, like, as he started releasing stuff that finally was like really embraced by the mainstream, and we were kind of, I don't know, wherever we land, I don't, you guys can decide, but we're in kind of a random space in country music, I feel like. And it's like our stuff musically, we started being put on the same bills a lot. And so we were playing in Denver one night, and I'll never forget it, because I was walking down the hall, and I'm a huge UFC fan, and I grew up wrestling, so it's kind of like the cousin of, mm-hmm. you know, and Justin Gaethje was at that show, and he's one of the best, and, you know, a champ. And I was like, what in the world is Justin Gaethje doing here? And then he walks into Co's room, and they're boys, and I'm like, Co just became even more of a rock star in my mind, you know, hanging out with some of the baddest dudes on the planet. And anyway, we were all in there talking, and just kind of got to talking about new music and what we had coming up. And we were in Denver, which was kind of ironic, because the song that I got in my back pocket, I'm like, I've been thinking about sending this to Co, and I'm, you know, I just was like, I got a song I need to send to you. He's like, send it. So sent it to him, and probably a week later I sent it to him. And I mean, I'm sure you guys have heard stories like this a million times, but usually there's a lot of back and forth and a lot of people's opinions and a lot of team chatter about, should we do this? The release time, there's so much that has to line up. And I just texted him the song, and I was like, dude, I think you on second verse would just send it over the top. And he immediately was like, man, brother, that's a song I'm in. And then we proceeded to not tell anybody. And we booked the studio in Cisco, Texas. We set up the videographers, and we got it all the way to the point of no return. And then we were like, oh, hey, by the way, we're doing this. And because we didn't want anybody to say no.
Yeah.
So it was really kind of a unique way of going about a feature. We just, you know, no disrespect to anybody, but it was like, we wanted to do this.
Mm-hmm. It was going to happen no matter what.
We were going to make sure it happened. Yeah. And so
no bureaucracy.
Yeah,
shake it in the way.
Bureaucracy.
Yeah, bureaucracy. Yeah.
No, I think that's a powerful thing too. And I mean, collaborations are honestly so powerful. Just getting to take your fan base and their fan base and putting those things together. And there's, of course, a lot of overlap in general in those two things. But the people that maybe weren't as huge of a fan of one of the two of you now gets to go back and listen to your catalog at a higher level.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely something to, you know, I mean, we're in a different era of country music now, right? Where things can almost kind of live on their own. You know, you can do a feature that doesn't necessarily have to be on a record, or I think it's a lot less precious. But, you know, my mentality is going, man, if everybody's being less precious with them, then I'm going to be more precious with. Like, I just want to, naturally, something in me is going like, well, do the opposite, because that's what's always worked for you, you know?
Yeah.
stay in Nashville. And I moved to Texas. And then, you know, like, it works from just everything that we've done has kind of been backwards.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, in the same breath where I'm like, there's so much power in them, I'm being kind of more selective than ever with it, because I'm kind of seeing the opposite happen in the industry. So for me and my brand, I feel like it's right to be like really intentional with them, you know, and make sure that we do think like exactly what you're talking about, that the fan overlap, like, yeah, you can get in front of a bunch of new fans by doing a collaboration,
right?
But it's kind of the same way that I view taking a tour is like, but if that fan isn't, if you're not going to retain that new listener, then it doesn't matter how much exposure you've got, you know, like if there's not enough overlap there, then it just doesn't make sense for me.
So. Yeah. It's got to make sense beforehand.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. So and honestly, something I never even like thought of on that side, you know, but very smart. Cause if not, like you get a temporary blip, but you don't make real fans, you know?
Yeah. And it's just more noise, you know? And, you know, Ben Rector,
sure.
Tulsa cat. I've known him since I was a young pup, you know, and, he said something one time when we were writing that stuck with me like to this day. And he said, the world doesn't need another good song. He's like, it needs great. And if it's not great, then we should just hang out instead of write a decent song, you know?
Yeah.
And, when we wrote, this was a couple years, handful of years ago now. We were writing a song and he was like, it's just good. It's just okay. It's not bad. I mean, we've written enough songs that we don't write bad songs anymore.
Yeah.
But it's just okay. And so we should stop. And so we just started hanging out. I think we ordered some burgers and we started talking. And then this other song idea came out and it became like one of our early on songs. It's called The Same Thing. It's off of our like way back record.
Yeah.
But it ended up being a great song. But it came as a result of us being like, world doesn't need another good song, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of just been something that stuck with me. And I care, you know, try to carry that forward in collaborations. It's like the world doesn't need another good one, you know?
Yeah.
It just needs, like, if you are really fired up about it, you should do that.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then find something else. So, cool.
Well said, man. I'm curious how you ended up in Mexico with Co.
I can tell you how, bro.
Please.
Casey Donahue, he kind of does this, what's it? Is it Boots on the Beach thing? I don't remember. I'm getting that.
It's a festival.
Boots on the Beach is Casey's. I was thinking of Luke Bryan's thing.
Oh, yeah.
Crash My Playa.
What I was going to say is it's kind of the Texas country equivalent of Crash My Playa.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure that Luke's wasn't Boots on the Beach. Casey Donahue's Boots on the Beach. They rent out the whole resort, and it's like 3 straight weeks of Texas country, which is dangerous.
Totally. 3 days is probably dangerous.
It's all inclusive, so the drinks are flowing, people are in the pool, and he invites, you know, all of his buddies. And so Co and I got invited on the same year. It was, you know, me and Pat Green and Randy Rogers and Josh Abbott and
that's
Co
sick.
and Casey, and we just go down there and have a ball. And it's pretty cool because you get to hang with the fans, like truly hang. Like we would get up there and play, and then we would go get in the pool and hang out and watch the other people play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, we would do karaoke. And so I got up there and I was like singing Sublime and Co's, I don't remember what he was singing, but we just don't take yourself too seriously and have a good time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we had some fun. Just, it's just nice to be with a bunch of artists that you don't have to be on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of times, especially if you're on tour, it's like you're still kind of on, even if you don't mean to be. You're still in work mode a little bit. Not there. Not in Cabo.
Right.
So it was great, man. I loved it. And I know Parker's been. I know they invited Ella a couple years ago, and she
remember
went.
That.
So it's kind of a revolving cast of people, but there's some staples too. You know, the Pat Greens and the Randys and the mm-hmm. Josh and the Wade Bowens. So.
Legends.
How often do you really get to kick it with those people that are like your peers?
Not like that, you know, right. And that's the beauty of it. I think that's why people keep going back is, yeah. You know, it is rare. Even like I said, even when we're hanging out, even when Ko and I are in Denver together, we're still like, Ko's still entertaining people, even backstage. So it's not mm-hmm. like we just get this uninterrupted hang time, and that's kind of what Cabo is. There's enough, you're there for enough time that you can go get a meal together, and you don't have, you know, meet and greet in an hour or something. So
yeah,
it's a good time, man. And I'm glad that trip happened, because it really did kind of springboard into what became Rocky Mountain Low. It was just good hangs and enjoying each other's company and like talking about life and realizing we see a lot of things the same way, and it helps that we're both in Texas, because we could make it happen pretty efficiently, you know, like pretty seamlessly. Just pick the day on the calendar that we were both in town, like a random Wednesday, and drove out to meet the day that we cut that song. So funny. If I could show you our text thread that day. Ko's truck broke down, like wouldn't start, so I was on my way to jump his truck. He's got a brand new GMC, awesome blacked out pickup truck, and I'm in my '96 Bronco going to jump him. I was just cracking up. I'm like, "How are you? You have a brand new truck. Why is that thing not starting?" And anyway, his neighbor ends up being able to get there before I can, so he gets a jump, and then his truck locks its keys in its inside. Like his truck's running now, with the keys in it. And we're trying to get to the studio to go record this song.
Wow.
And earlier that week, we had just, you know, my house flooded last year. And we were almost to the end. It was like 8-9 months of renovation. Almost to the end of that whole sequence. And one of the workers runs my van into my house. Like, takes out the garage door, takes out some bricks.
Rooster,
dude.
Oh, no.
Runs it into the house, and because I was not at the house, and they were like, we need to move this van. I was like, yeah, just back it up. They backed it up, and then they pulled it forward into my house. So we were just having both of us were just having, like, terrible luck this week. And I was, like, laughing and going, hey, at least we're going to be in the right mindset to cut this song, because this is about a terrible day. Mm-hmm. And we ended up having a good time. And then later that day, I get a call from my wife that my middle girl had fallen and split her head open. So I was like, I got 30 minutes. We got to wrap this up. So we recorded the vocals. We shot the content and what little content we could get. And all that was wrapped in like 45 minutes. And then I was on the road to the hospital. And I called Ko. Once we knew, you know, my little girl was all right and she got some stitches and everything was good, I was like, man, I will never forget this day. You know, it's just kind of a crazy whirlwind of a day, but it ended in a really cool piece of art. And I think, you know, there's something to how crazy that day was that got, I don't know, osmosis kind of wrapped up in the lyrics of that song.
Love it.
Yeah, man. Who'd you write it with?
Is one of the few songs I wrote in Nashville off this next record is like, most of them I'm flying people out to La Rosa Ranch in Texas and our family ranch out there, but this one I wrote at Combustion, where I write, and it was with Austin Goodlow, Michael Tyler, and Thomas Archer, which was I think our first time writing together in that combo. You know, Goodlow's producing a lot of the stuff that I do, mm-hmm. and we've written a lot of songs together. Michael Tyler's, you know, I feel like, especially, you know, having been on tour with Al Dean, like a lot of the there's some fan, there's a lot of fan overlap between like what Aldean does and what we do. Mm-hmm. And Michael Tyler's been such a big part of that Aldean sound over the years.
Absolutely.
So it was kind of like, we should write with Michael. And Thomas Archer has had a bunch of success recently. So it's been, and he's a combustion guy. So it was all kind of in-house.
That's sick.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a new record.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have it mostly done or? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm probably not supposed to say anything. Yeah. I never know what I'm supposed to. Yeah, he left the room, so we're good. I never know what I'm supposed to say or what I'm not. But yeah. If you're not working on a new record, what are you doing? Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Been working soon. On it, and yeah, I think, you know, everybody hopes to have that record, mm-hmm. and you know, all I can do is worry about the music and the result. Let the results speak for themselves. I have no control over how it's perceived or,
yeah.
you know, how many people listen to it or whatever. But I can honestly say that, like, I think this is that record.
Love it.
And it's like, hey, if you're going to remember me by one, remember me by this one, you know? Yeah. And that's exciting, you know, because this is my fifth record. I haven't ever said that, mm-hmm. you know? And... like I'm not saying this about the first record that I've ever made. Like I've made a few at this point,
yeah.
and
great ones.
You know,
honestly.
When one feels just a little extra special, and you know, I think it's helped. You know, just being in the stage of life that I'm in, and having the writers around me that have seen into my like my personal life to really be able to write stuff that I've lived, and it's just cool to see it all. Kind of come together, but yeah, absolutely been working on a new record, and you know, just stoked that we just put out a video, like a little teaser of a song that has been one of my personal favorite songs that I've ever cut. And usually if I love it, it means it's not gonna pop off, like that's just the reality. It's like the ones that I love the most end up being the deep cut, you know, and I feel like that's the plague of being an artist, like but this one in particular, we put it out and there was like a couple million views in the first day, and was like, well, then we should try it on Instagram, see what happens. Same thing, try it on Facebook, same. So I'm really pumped because it feels like the stuff that I'm really excited about is also just so happens to be the stuff that our fans are getting really excited about. So that's like that's the sweet spot. That's what you hope for, right? Like you hope to have success in any capacity, but if it could be the song that you would hand choose that works, you know, that's the magic. So pretty stoked that the fans have spoken up on that song.
I
just love that song.
That is true. I mean, if the last song you sing every night's your favorite song that you sang, that's the mm-hmm. literal dream, you know?
It is, man. And yeah, I mean, like there's a lot of successful artists that have a handful of songs that they wish they didn't have to sing, mm-hmm. and I've always kind of taken that as a warning sign of like just be really careful what you cut, you know, because you are gonna have to sing it every night, mm-hmm. if it works. You yeah. know,
if it does what
unless
you want
you're
it to do.
Unless dude, I went and saw Ray LaMontagne at Red Rocks. It was magical, but he did not play a single song that like from his like hits, you know what I mean? Where you're just like, oh, the song that made me a Ray LaMontagne fan was not played that night. So I guess if you're Ray, you can do whatever you want. But in country music,
Jolene or whatever.
Yeah, he didn't play Jolene. Gosh, he didn't play Trouble. He didn't play You Are the Best Thing. But you know,
he's play at least some of the hits, dude. Like I'm paying for babysitters.
Ray,
here.
Come on, man. Yeah,
and $20 beers. Give
I'm
me
at
some
Red
hits.
Rocks. Yeah. Give me one, you know.
Yeah.
But
dog a bone over here.
Yeah.
I love that you still get to go to shows a little bit too, like that.
I try to.
Yeah.
Few and far between.
Of course.
But yeah, I got to take my wife last year. We went to like on a Wednesday night. It's usually outside of country music genre because we tour Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and mm-hmm. I'm always working Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And so every now and then like a pop act will come through and play like a Wednesday. And that happened on Halloween last year, and Sabrina Carpenter came through town, and my wife loves her, and because of how much she loved that record, whatever that, I can't remember what it's called, but it had, you know, Please, 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 and all that stuff. I mean, just like
hits. Full of hits, dude. It's so amazing.
I was like, I like inhaled it like secondhand smoke, right? Like I just start hearing it because we're in the car and I'm like, oh my, like this stuff's amazing. Like this, the production's incredible. The songs are great.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And then,
so she, you know, I see that she's coming through town. I'm like, Dana would love to go. So we go.
Sure.
Right? We go. Well, it ends up being Halloween, okay? So I am like a grown man sitting in a arena full of like, there were, it was wild, dude. I think I was the only normally dressed man in the room that night. I was sitting next to a grown kitten. You know? It was just wild, but it was such a fun experience. And the show was incredible. And I remember I walked away inspired, you know? So that's why I still try to go to shows because it still is inspiring. Like, it, no matter how many times, I don't know. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I think it's also extremely important, like, from a money perspective and an expectation perspective for, like, people that play shows for a living to go and pay for shows and wait in line and buy beers and shit. Because it's like, I'm like, man, I better, like, practice my ass off. Because people are, like, getting babysitters and paying for parking and paying for beers. I can't be fucking around up there. It's like, I got to play good. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is their. A lot of people.
It's their vacation.
Exactly. Yeah. It really is. Like, they've saved up for this night to be able to. I mean, I do that for when we go out of town. I'm like, I'm going to make sure that by the time we get to whatever that date is, I don't want to think about money. So I've saved for that moment. Yeah. And then we just go and we live. And I feel like a lot of country fans, that's the same thing. Like, they don't, they want to get there and they want to forget about everything, including how much that beer costs. Like, so they've planned for this night to have an incredible time. And if you get out there and you just phone it in, like, you've done a huge disservice to your own fans, you know? And, yeah, I think that's why I value guys like Eric Church, who will change the set list off. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, because there's guys that went to, you know, you sold out this place two nights in a row. There's the same guy. There's at least one guy or girl that came to both shows, and they deserve their money's worth each night. And so I just think I have immense respect for, you know, acts like that that keep evolving and keep changing things, and you don't just see the same show, the same stale show and
same covers.
It just show me some variance, you know, step up and if you can take make your solo just a little bit different, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just even those little things, or just your talking point has banner. A little more nuance than, and a little more, you're specific to that city. And, you know, last time I was here, insert a real moment that you had in that city. Like, that just, for me as a fan, I remember being in, you know, growing up in Tulsa, like when people come through Kane's Ballroom and they would talk about some coffee shop down the road that they went to. I was like, dang, they really have been here. Mm-hmm. That's cool. They like our city, you know?
Tulsa's great, by the way. I love it.
I was just there, man.
Yeah.
I swear it's, they like, have great time coffee stands here. Still in Tulsa. It's amazing. Every time I go back, I'm like, it is the same place, like nothing, in the best way. I try to get my wife to move there all the time, but it ain't happening, dude.
Yeah, we do a lot of shows where we have, like, we did a whole tour where it was like we played two nights in every city.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with Luke this year, we're doing that again. So we're the kind of.
That's amazing, by the way, that, like, for him and his family, like, to be able to just park it for a couple days and maybe actually enjoy
camp out
their time in that place. That's amazing. Good for you guys.
Yeah, it's really fun, but it's like, well, it's hard coming up with a set because it's like when you're just some guys on a bandstand, it's like, all right, let's play this song next. But it's like we've got lighting and we've got, you know, guitar techs and all this video and stuff. And like we don't use time code or anything, so the lighting director has to manually change everything. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's nothing's automated. So it's a lot of work to change the set, you know? So now we have to do two sets, you know, for each thing. And we're not a kind of, Luke's not the kind of artist that doesn't play the hits. Like, we play the hits. You know what I mean?
As you should.
Gotta play the hits.
All 82 of them at this point.
Yeah.
Like, play them all.
But it's also like, we want to play some deep cuts for the OG fans. And then we want to play some songs off the deep record. And then we want to play some new songs. And it's like, then we have like 40 songs in the set. You know? It's hard.
It's creating a set list is like, especially if you have like an emotional tie to those songs or memories to those songs. It's almost, it's like an impossible task. And
how do y'all do it?
I mean, we figure it out. I don't know. I haven't figured out the recipe exactly. And I think that's why we're constantly changing, you know, from, we just started, we played, Billy Bob's, and then the next weekend we went and played Grizzly Rose, and it was like, right, great rooms, right? And so we started, and from 1 week to the next, it's already changed because we're like, hey, this was, everything about this was great, but there was this one little part in the set where I feel like we gave them too much time to go get another beer. You know what I mean? Or like, I felt it. So, all right, we got to swap that out and, you know, just being really intentional about like the energy flow of the set, because also, you know, we used to be the guys that just opened for everybody. So you could walk out and just punch them in the face for 30, 45 minutes, just play every banger you got, and you're fighting, you know, tooth and nail for their attention. So that works. You can't do that for 90 minutes to 2 hours. You're just going to get fatigue. Like you're going to be playing to skeletons at the end of the night.
It's like a lot of songs too, yeah.
So you got to have, you got to, you know, take them on a ride and make them feel something. And I think what I have crafted my set around is like, if they could take one thing away from the set and know something more about me and how I view the world, how do we create, like, what do we want that to be? And then we craft the whole show around that. So right now we have this really cool moment, where we basically have like this campfire thing, this moment. And I get to talk about how I view the world. And one of the things that I realized, and I'm learning along the way, is like, success has a cost, you know, and we don't really talk about it all that much. Like, it's just, man, if you want it bad enough, if you work hard enough, you can have it all, right? Like, you can make your dreams come true. You can have the money, you can have the fame, you can have the career you've always wanted. And but they don't, like, you don't talk about the implications on your personal life, what you have to give up to get there, or what you might have to give up to get there. And so I've started putting that into my show, and I've said, you know, somewhere along the way I realized, like, I've seen it happen enough that I don't want success if it means by the time I finally get there, I don't recognize myself, or I've lost the people that I love, or whatever. So I've just reframed my mindset, and then I play a song that essentially is written with that sentiment. And it's been a really cool moment, because, like, if you know nothing else about me, know that, like, I will not be outworked, but I also will not work so hard that I lose my real life. You know what I mean? Yeah. Someday, nobody's going to care how many platinum records are on my wall. You know, like, my kids aren't going to care about that. My wife's not going to care about that. They're going to care about our relationship. And so, like, keeping that in mind as you navigate this whole music industry is easier said than done, but it's still, there is no balance. Like, you're never going to really figure it out, but you gotta at least try, you know?
I remember, like, well, first of all, like, Luke has just been the exact same dude, like, since I've known him for over 10 years now, probably. But I remember, like, when we were on the Brantley Gilbert cruise, and he was, like, he had this nice suite, you know, like, that him and his wife were staying in, with, like, a little mini pool, and like, there's a grand piano in there. It was, like, nice. I'm like, damn, this room's so nice. And he's like, yeah, but I can't leave, or whatever. And I was like, oh, boo-hoo, like, you're, you know, stuck in here. But he's like, no, like, I literally, like, can't leave this little, like,
room. Is this Luke, or is this?
Luke, yeah. He's like, because as soon as he walks out, it's just like a mob, like.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? And so, like, I started talking about it, and it's like, he can't, like, go to Walmart and, like, buy socks and stuff like that. So it's, like, part of the price of being, which doesn't sound like that bad of a thing to have what he has, I know, but it's like, when you're just a normal guy, it's, like, weird to have these problems.
I can't imagine, man. I mean, we get small doses of it, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I can't, I don't know. I think that,
I mean, you heard these stories like Michael Jackson, where he would, like, rent out a grocery store to pretend a grocery shop because he could never grocery shop, like, in his entire life, because he's been famous since he was a kid.
Yeah, I just don't think we're, like, we're not made to handle that, to be honest.
No,
like,
way, dude.
Like, nobody's supposed to be that famous. But I mean, at the same time, you know, I know there's I'm sure silver linings and beauty and all of that. And it's, you know, it's like, well, if you're going to cry, wouldn't you rather cry in your mansion? You know,
yeah,
but,
totally.
But at the same time, I think that especially in country music, like we're all like pretty normal. And so to take that part away from us, that is a tough thing to cope with versus maybe a pop star with a massive ego. Like Luke probably wants to meet his best friend at the bar, you know, and just have a drink and catch up from, but you know, we've, the success has probably stripped a lot of that opportunity away. And yeah, I think that's like the big thing for me is like, I really appreciate being able to have both right now. And yeah. Who knows what's going to happen. I'm not in control of the results of my music or how people perceive me or whatever, but it is really nice, like the fans that we have that do, you know, come up to us in public, like they've been pretty like respectful about, like this last year we were out at the beach and I could tell these college kids all immediately were like, we know who that is. And I was like, oh great, here goes my family dinner, you know. And they waited until my wife took a couple of our kids to the bathroom, and then they walked up and they were like, hey, we didn't want to bother you. We could see you with your family, but could we get a picture real quick? And I'm like, man, how cool is that? Like, that is beautiful, you know, and yeah. I really appreciated that.
Take notes, people. That's how it's done.
Yeah, it's not that people don't want to interact with their fans. It's just, like, totally. Time and place, and there's a really, like, considerate way to do that. And we've just been extremely lucky that our fan base is also, I think they just know, like, maybe what's important to me, and they... maybe they're listening to the song and it makes them understand that in some way. But it's been cool to interact with our fans and to have those moments and not just be like, oh, here we go again, you know. Mm. So
no, it's cool. And it's interesting too, like you talking about, you know, being at these shows. Do you find that you can connect with the music outside of country music a little bit more than maybe you used to?
Yeah, man. It's yeah. I don't know what it is about that, but yeah, I find myself, it's almost like you're listening to your peers now.
Yeah.
And so you just know too much. You know what yeah. I mean?
On radio interviews you with just, the people that are playing the songs.
I know when I hear an interview on country radio, I know when that person is lying through their teeth or not, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so or I know when that song is completely not the life that somebody's lived or whatever. Yeah. And I don't know that about Sabrina Carpenter,
right?
Or I don't know anything about those people's personal life. Yeah. So it's a lot easier to digest without having kind of a backstory in your mind already about something. But I will say if I was just to blindly listen to music, the country music landscape or the pop, like I would still gravitate to country music.
Yeah.
It's so like, there's so much good there mm-hmm. that, it hasn't made me not enjoy listening to it anymore.
Right.
It's just like I have a different vantage point now, right? Like,
yeah.
Like it's weird that Jason Aldean is like a friend now, not just Jason Aldean. It's just like,
right.
Well, I don't know. You awesome. Guys, you know, you guys,
totally.
You guys have experienced that on the same level, probably even more because you guys have talked to way more artists than I probably have in a, you know, in a setting like this. But it's like they are just people, and when that happens to somebody that's been like monumental in your like an influential, it's just it's a trip, you know?
Yeah.
And
I asked that because like honestly for me, I've been going outside of genre to get inspiration. Not that I don't listen to country music, I still primarily listen to country music, but just like I can detach from it a little easier, and I just feel like that's something that it's yeah. like it's easier to just as a fan, you want to detach, you want to like be engulfed by the thing, you know.
Well, it helps me listen to music the way that I think most country listeners listen to music.
Yeah,
you know, and that is like I am not dissecting every word that Kings of Leon says, you know, that mm-hmm. Caleb from, I'm not dissecting it the way that I do, and I'm not like rating, I'm not grading the song. I'm like, oh, kind of like how this sounds. Like, oh, play that one again. You know, mm. I'm listening to it like a typical listener, not like somebody in the industry.
Yeah.
So I think that also plays a huge factor in me just being able to enjoy music. And it's really not all that different. Like, even just like a, I don't know, like a Noah Kahan song, or like, it allows me to just listen to, like, I'm just like, I feel like I'm on a road trip. You know, every time one of his songs come on, I'm like, man, I'm 22 years old on a college road trip right now. And I'm not thinking about what they did in the studio or who might have played on that or who wrote this song. It's just like, I don't know any of these people. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. You
know? And so it's enjoyable again. It's just like, yeah, I think I find a lot of enjoyment in getting outside the genre.
Yeah.
And in my head, you're also a rock guy too, I'm sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Definitely. I mean, and it's really, I feel like in the last few years, really musically kind of leaned that way for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to just be like what our fans really like, you know? And which is awesome because I love rock and roll. I love the, like, the heartland rock and roll is like what I call it, like the Mellencamp and the Springsteen, and not like, not all of it. Like, I love certain parts of certain records or certain songs, and taking that and kind of meshing it with the stuff from country that I love.
The Eagles.
Eagles. Yeah. I mean, some of the Skinner stuff, I've always, you know, said like, if Skinner was coming out in 2026, I think they would probably live in Texas and they would be considered a country band.
100%.
You know, but back then they were rock and roll. So it's cool because that's the kind of music that I really do love. It's like, it's always been country and rock and roll, and rock and roll that specifically had like some wide open to it or some soul to it. It wasn't, I never really got into the heavy stuff, probably because it's just too complex for my pea brain, but I like, hey, take it easy. I can get into that all day. Like, I understand that, you know? But I love, you know, those two things, those two worlds colliding, and like musically for me, that's my sweet spot. Is like, I remember Dan Huff, the first time I ever met Dan Huff, I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And I was in a little rock band with his son, and I had no idea. His Elliot.
Sick drummer, right?
He's a great drummer. He was with Kane Brown for a while. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was in a like high school rock band essentially with him when I first moved to town, and he came. I had no idea that Elliot's dad was Dan Huff, and I'm of course like a country music lover, right? Like I know who everybody in country music is because I'm reading the back of the records, and so Dan Huff walks down, and I'm like, is this dad's Dan Huff? Like, this is crazy. And he starts to give us, he's like, play me something. So we play, and Dan goes, hey, I heard you were a country singer. Like, that's what you're going for. I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I don't know why. You got a rock voice. And I was just like, oh, like one of the biggest country producers on the planet just told me, like, you got a rock and roll voice, not a country voice. And, you know, fast forward, actually, Dan's been playing on some of my stuff, which has been such a fun, like, stroll down memory lane to be like, you remember when I was in your basement playing, you know, rock music, and
you
here
had
we
no
are.
Idea.
I had that's literally no trip. Idea. I was just like, you know, he had a basement in a place that we could rehearse, and I was like, you know, Elliot's parents must be doing well. Like, I didn't know. I had no idea.
All the garage band like amps and drums are like super nice.
that was kind of the vibe. Yeah. It was like, oh man, like this is different than it was in Oklahoma, you know. And I was just a few months into being in Tennessee, and to have that, it's been really fun to like look back and laugh about that now. And Dan produced obviously the Brooks and Dunn reboot mm-hmm. stuff, and that I got to be a part of, so that was my first time getting to work with him. Mm-hmm. And it was just like it was awesome.
Was it only in America, you saying?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, and I loved it. I'm like every 4th of July I'm like, I hope I hear that song now, you know. But it's, yeah, what a, talk about something I never had on my bingo card, was singing a song with Brooks and Dunn. Like,
bro,
I don't care who you are. I don't care how famous you are. I don't care how popular music is. You didn't have that on your bingo card. There's no way. There's literally no way. So that was a moment, man. That was cool.
So cool.
Yeah. And Dan Huff, you know, like the full circle moment of that in my life, in my career was really special too. Yeah.
And you got Aldine's number in your phone.
Bro, I'll tell you, like, everybody back home was like, dude, how was Jason? Like, did you even get to meet him? I'm like, Yeah, night one. We stayed up like every night till 2 a.m. watching Chappelle stand up, you know, and we went golfing together, and, you know, our wives hit it off and our kids hit it off, and it was so easy. It was effortless. To this day, the most effortless, like, integration into another camp that we've ever experienced. And I'm just like, dude, Al Dean's like the dude. He's like the dude you meet at the lake and tie up next to. I mean, he just so incredibly normal for a superstar and somebody who's been doing it for so long. Like, I learned a lot, and just like admire how extravagant he could and can be, but also how normal he is when you talk to the guy. Like, yeah, there's nothing extravagant. It's just a human. And I know that that's probably, we all know that, like, everybody, but when you, again, it's like you meet somebody that influenced you, you don't know what to expect. And that's kind of the last thing I expected, was like, man, we're buds now. Like, that's cool. So
that's all that. I know you talked about the Grizzly Rose and Billy Bob's. Hmm. What are some other venues that you've got to play recently that have just been wild?
I mean, Canes is always a trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we played Red Rocks with Parker, which, you know, we're still clawing our way up to. Well, we sold the Grizzly Rose out 3 or 4 times now, so we're clawing our way towards that. It's gonna be a really sweet payoff someday when we do get to headline Red Rocks. But man, there was Coyote Joe's.
Love Coyote Joe's. Love Grizzly Rose.
I mean, we had never played in, I don't even think we'd ever played in the Carolinas. And we went out and took like a random club date at Coyote Joe's. And like, we sold like 3,500 tickets or something crazy like that. And we were like, we didn't even know we had fans out here. And this is like one of the best markets we've played in a long time. It was really cool. So that was a special one. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of really cool places in Texas.
I always struggle with this question. I don't know why. I just, like, my brain just goes like, I don't remember where I've played at all.
Well, that's because you play arenas and stadiums now at this point. Like, you probably remember the football stadiums that were cool, though.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember playing Red Rocks, and it was cool. I remember absolutely loving playing Coyote Joe's.
Yeah.
You know, and the Grizzly Rose. And that, I remember dancing afterwards, line dancing after that show.
I think that's...
And having fun.
The really cool part about the slow build is you do get all of these little nuggets of, like, really cool memories on the way up. You know, would I snap my fingers and be at Madison Square Garden if I could? Probably. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, you know, they tell you that the van days, this is the same thing with raising kids too. It's like, oh man, you're in it. Like, don't blink. And these are the good days. And you're like, how could these possibly be the good days? I haven't slept in 72 hours. and same thing with being in a van. You're like, how could these be the good days? You're on a tour bus. Don't say that to me, you know? And then you move forward and you're like, man, these are the days that we talk about. You know, we do talk about how we were sleeping on the floor of an RV following the Parker McCollum tour around, and they thought we were crazy for, we put chains on our tires to get to Fargo to make the show. You know, we're rolling in at the last second and throwing our stuff on stage and going, and, you know, we're, you know, losing bets and getting tattoos and in the greener and just like stuff like that, I think it is beautiful. The slow build in that way is beautiful, but I would love to be playing football stadiums like
you will, man. But there's a reason Garth does like did the dive bar tour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like the stadiums are unlike anything I've ever done, you know, musically or otherwise. But it's like also when you're playing the Dusty Armadillo and the crowd is right here and it is hot and you could feel them. Mm. It's just a different vibe, you know?
I would love to know your answer on this.
Okay.
Do you have like a threshold of when it starts to feel different? Like, just for me, like my answer to that would be like somewhere between 2,500 and 3,500 people, it starts to become like a sea, and you just can't, like, I can't possibly, when we go play Billy Bob's and there's 5,000 people there, you can't even absorb how many people are there anymore. Like, you can see to a certain extent, and then it all kind of becomes the same. Do you have like does the vibe shift for you when you topped, as you know, you've been with Luke for the long haul, so did it ever have a moment where it just was like, oh, now it is completely different now?
Yeah, for sure. When we played, our first time ever playing a stadium was at CMA Fest. You know, they have the thing. And
yeah.
That's, you know, that's not like his first stadium show. But the first time you did that, and it was like, we walk out on stage and it's like, you don't just look out, but then like you have to like turn your neck up and look up also. and it's like, there's like some dude like at the tip top of the thing, and it's like there's 45,000 people. And it was just like my hands the whole time were like, you know, I'm just scared shitless, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then we go to do our first show, and then we did play Dallas, and I think we played Seattle that year, and all the stuff like that. And it's just kind of like, and then you do a couple, and then you're just, you're a little more relaxed and you can have fun. But it's like, I think it's like, I don't think of like a number amount, but it's like the club type, the venue type, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
the club show is like the perfect spot where it's not a small rinky dink thing and you're at an actual venue, but you've got that intimacy with the crowd where you're like right up on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the theater is a little different because it's just like, you know, sometimes there's a pit or whatever, but that's cooler. Then you kind of have that thing. And then, you know, you play these big honky tonks. Like if you play, you know, 3,500 people at, Cotty Joe's, that's a lot of people, and like you can't even see in the all the way in the back where the bull is and everything. It's like can't even see that far, really.
Yeah.
Then you do arenas. Did you guys do sheds on?
We did sheds with Aldean.
Yeah.
And we've done arenas with some other tours. Yeah.
And then the arena is like kind of where it just gets bonkers, I think. Right.
The arena.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy sheds more than arenas.
Yeah, I think you're just closer.
Yeah.
Right? It feels like you're closer to the fans. And with the arenas, it's sort of like you're on a stage and there's like there's a bigger photo pit and then everyone's barriers and you're kind of higher than everyone. The shed feels like they're not, but it just feels more like level or something.
Also, there's something about like sheds are designed for music and arenas are designed for sports.
Yep.
You know, I think there's something to that too. Like it's set up to view sports, you know, and the sheds feel a little more, like you're saying, kind of like, it's like an outdoor club, you know, it's an outdoor theater is literally what it is. And it feels that, like you can feel that difference for sure. Like and what's crazy is a lot of times, like you said, the amphitheaters will feel small or like more intimate, but they might be five times as big as the arena. Like when we played up in Tinley Park, and I think there was like 50,000 people there for the Aldean show.
Holy shit.
And it was an outdoor amphitheater. And then, you know, we go play an arena on a different tour, and there's 7,500 people in that arena sold out. And it feels big. Like the amphitheater felt more intimate. It felt like they were right there, you know?
Totally. And then you get the warm summer vibes, and people are out in the lawn, and it's just a... That's what do you, as a fan, Nick, what's your vibe? What's your take?
I mean, my thing always has been the club show experience. So for a fan, as at a venue that is a shed, you can have that. You just got to get pit tickets.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or you got to be in those first rows.
Yeah.
So if you can get that experience at a club show experience at a venue, I'm in.
Yeah.
So I mean, Burgettstown in Pennsylvania, that was like my Pennsylvania hometown area. If I could get pit tickets, any artist I could have an experience with. Mm. You know, you just like feel like you're part of the show.
Yeah.
That's why I love club shows, though, is because you can feel like you're a part of almost every show.
Yeah.
You know?
You ever have that moment where you're like, man, I love this artist, and now they're so big that it's like, this sucks. I liked when it was like a kind of a little bit of a secret, right? And we could go see him at venues that we loved, and now we got to go to AT&T Stadium or whatever it might be.
It's like the entire city of Nashville, how they feel about Stapleton.
Well, no doubt, man.
As a fan, and I've had that conversation with other friends that are fans, right?
Yeah.
You also have the same rooting power. I think country music, even more than some other genres, like, this is my guy. This is someone that I love and I ride or die with, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want them to be at that bigger stage because you almost feel proud that they are.
Yeah. You know? I think, yeah, I do think that country music is one of the, well, we still, there are still acts, you know, that build it from the small clubs all the way. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still Luke Combs that are doing that. And a lot of times I think in other genres, it's like this brand new 20-year-old puts out this, and they're just, they never got to stair step, which is not a negative thing. But what it doesn't allow is that fan who saw you when you played for 75 people,
yeah,
and they talked to you at your merch stand and they bought 4 of your t-shirts because they were like wanting to support, you know?
Yeah.
And then for that person, like I have, there's a couple that I used to play at this Mexican restaurant in Louisville, Texas during COVID. It was the only place that I could play. And it was right before I met you because the first show that we played in 2021 was opening for Flatland. And that was when Matt was,
oh, yeah,
was
I remember
in, our,
very well.
In our band. And like the months leading up to that, the only place I could play every 2 weeks was as frequently as they did music. And it was this Louisville, Texas, little taco spot. And this couple there, I remember them, you know, this is after I'd been writing songs for Warner. This is after, come on, dude, look at that baby face Corey right there.
Yep.
That was that night. That was our first real show back after after COVID. Dude, I forgot you snapped pictures that night.
Yeah, yeah. I also have some you at Jay Joyce's spot too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was actually going through these photos last night. Just kind of memory lane. But, yeah.
So yeah, I mean I just remember this couple at this Mexican restaurant going, like they were listening to me play, and it's me, it's my like my kids running around and my wife at the table. You're like, nobody's listening except for this couple. And they were like, I can't believe that you're playing here. Like, you're so good. Like, this is their words, not mine, just caveat. They're like, you're as good as Morgan Wallen. Why aren't you doing what he's doing? And I'm like, well, if I could snap my fingers, I would. And they said that, and you know what was ironic is this summer they came to the Houston show where we played with Morgan Wallen.
Wow.
And it was such a full circle moment. Like, you know, I started tearing up thinking about this couple because I knew they were there. I started tearing up thinking about it because I was like, man, what a journey. Like, they saw me playing for $50 and tacos. And now I'm on stage with the biggest country artist there is right now. And we're playing to, you know, NRG Stadium. And they're like, I hung out with that guy after his 4-hour set at the taco shop. You know what I mean? Like, what a cool journey. I think country music is one of the rare places that can still happen because we still have artists that are willing to go get in the van and build it that way.
Yeah.
And the fans that, like, those type of people who buy in that early, they don't go anywhere ever. Like, I could put out the worst song ever, and I think that they would listen because they support. You know what I mean? Hopefully I don't put out terrible music, but...
You don't.
You know, I could just, like, flick this coffee, you know, and it'd be like, it's my new single, and they'd probably be like, man, we love Corey. Like,
that's Aaron Ritchie.
Stream that. Yeah, exactly. Was it coins on a... Yeah, in a coffee mug or whatever?
On top of the dryer.
Oh, I love Aaron. Yeah. God bless. The first time we ever wrote together, it was, like, my first legit, I just signed my publishing deal and they put me with Aaron Ritchie because they were like, we don't know what to do with you. You're like Texas, Oklahoma, but you're like kind of commercial, but you're not anything. Put him with Aaron. And so we got in there and he's like, is this your first like official write? I was like, yeah. He's like, I had this idea. It's called Pay Me in Cheeseburgers. And I was like, am I being punked right now?
Like a camera somewhere.
Yeah. This is my first legit, you know, co-write. And turns out that's just Aaron. And I was like, I don't think that I can write that one. He's like, okay, cool. And just flips over. We keep writing and we go write a great song. But yeah, that was my first intro to Aaron was so funny, man.
That's so
and
great.
We've written some songs on this next record together. So he's been out to the Rosa Ranch and
awesome.
It's been it's cool to have old friends in the industry now, you know, like
totally.
it's, you know, I always hoped that would happen. And now it's, you know, 10-year histories with people, which is awesome. Like, so, y'all.
Yeah.
Like, y'all, come on.
Yeah, so cool, man. We're honestly stoked to be a part of your history, man.
And oh, thanks.
Can't wait to see where it continues to grow and listen to even more new music.
Likewise, man. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And congrats again on the number one that you're going to be celebrating while you're here in town.
Come on. I got, my wife and little girl are going to celebrate with me. So
great.
It's going to be a sweet night. But just shout out to the writers, because I don't know how you guys view number one parties, but I view them as like, this is for the writers. And I self-admittedly like didn't write this song, and a lot of people think that I did. So this is to recognize like great art, and they deserve that. So I'm glad we get to celebrate them tonight.
Yeah. Brother, thanks for being here with us and taking the time to come out here to Old Hickory
always.
And hang out. And are slightly more upgraded than the last time you were here, and it probably will be next time too.
It's great. Keep on moving onward and upward, baby.
Yeah. You too, dog.
Yeah.
We appreciate your brother. And guys, of course, if you listen to Raise Rowdy podcast, you probably listen to Corey. But if you don't, make sure you check out the new song.
If you don't, you do now.
Yeah. And dude, can't wait to hear what's next, man.
Thank you, brother.
Well, all right, y'all. Later.
Peace.